Ron wins the Masters Marathon.
Is Jack Nicklaus hitting out of a berry blind?
Yes, welcome back to the Teed Up Golf Podcast, episode 4 for Masters Week. Today's episode is brought to you by our presenting partner in Golf Box, up to 50% off store-wide right now. So while you're sitting on the couch watching the Masters, why not head over to golfbox.com.au and pick yourself up a few things to enhance your golf game. Thanks so much to our friends at Golf Box. Now, today's episode is incredible. Staying on theme with elite Australian amateurs at the Masters, we're joined by last year's candidate in Harrison Crowe. This time last year, he was almost standing on the first tee, ready to peg it up against the world's best. He qualified via the Asia-Pacific Amateur, getting up and down on 18 to get the W over in Thailand. We chat about his journey to the Masters last year. We chat about arriving on property, the amateur dinner, his practice rounds, the par 3 contest. He played with Minwoo and Larry Myers, who was playing in his last Masters. Of course, he broke Australia's hearts back in 1987 when he chipped in against the Shark. We talk about his first tee shot, his favourite hole, things he would do differently if he had his time again over there at Augusta National. We chat about Harrison's incredible amateur career. He got up to number 23 in the world rankings in the amateur game. We even chat about his viral moment when he was sitting at the pub over there at St Andrews at the Dunvegan and ran into Eric Anders Lang, and he went viral hitting a shot over onto the 18th green at St Andrews. Great insight from Harrison on all aspects of his golf life. Future is so bright for this lad. Absolutely love chatting to him. Let's get over to him right now. Harrison Crowe, welcome to the Teed Up Golf Podcast, mate. Long time coming. Good to have you on. How are you?
Good, mate. How are you? Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I'm down here in freezing Melbourne, like it's like 2 degrees, and you're over in the States hanging out before you launch into your Asian tour season. What's happening over there? How are you going?
Yeah, it's good. It's been a nice little downtime in Chicago, so it's actually not, it wouldn't be any better than what you've got down there in Melbourne, I can guarantee you that. Nice. But it is a nice change from pretty hot Sydney weather and from the weather I'm going to get in Saudi.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Nah, good to get over there to the States. Looks like it's always pure over there to practice. But, mate, the reason I've reached out to you to get you on this week is because you played in the Masters last year, and it's Masters week. So it's gearing up this time. I want to take you back to this time last year where you're probably a bit more nervous than you are this time this year. You would have been over there by now, probably almost about to go to the property to start practicing. You qualified via the Asia-Pacific Amateur, which was unbelievable. So yourself and Jasper have gone back-to-back for the Aussies with that. You made an amazing up and down on 18 to the roller bike, which was even better. I watched that replay yesterday when I was doing a bit of research on you to get you on. That got you into the Masters and the Royal Liverpool. Take us back there and the moment that you qualified and you knew you were going to Augusta.
Yeah, it was obviously a roller coaster flying around. I definitely remember that. And obviously lit it up pretty hot in the back nine when I kind of had to, and it didn't actually cross my mind about any of that until the fourth footer that I had to win, because I had a probably good 2 or 3 minutes to think about it. Then that's when it kind of clicked. So I mean, if I kind of, I know for a fact, if I had 30 seconds to get into my routine and putt straight away, it wouldn't have been as bad. Yeah. But then obviously like on the putt was such a huge sigh of relief, and then getting to celebrate with family and friends, and then you start planning, you're like, oh, going to Augusta. It was a pretty cool experience, and then you start planning everything, and it's a position you want to be in. So it was definitely a pretty cool memory.
No, mate, it's cool. And like seeing all the boys like Joshy Greer, who we spoke about before we started recording, one of the great men, and Butch and all those, but all your good mates, I guess, from golf, were there as well, playing part of the Aussie team. Jeff Gwan, I think, finished third. It's cool to see, like, that's the team element that pro golf you don't really get. So was that a cool way to sort of, in a way, cap off your amateur career?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, going into that week, it was going to be my last amateur event unless I won. And then, obviously, then I did win, and then it was like, okay, I got to hold off. But it's certainly a great reason to hold off. and it was certainly awesome to have all the Aussie boys there coming in on the last green. I had pretty much saw them throughout the whole 18th hole. They come back and watched, and it was, yeah, it was so sick. It was awesome. I had my dad there, which made it a little bit better.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
A lot better.
I didn't know if family got over there, because I knew Jasper had like half of Melbourne out there watching him when he won. So he got to celebrate with everyone.
Yeah, no, I had dad over there with his best mate. And we had a good little thing going. There was just a beer of birdie that they were doing. So I just wanted to get him as pissed as possible, and didn't take much over there in that heat.
No. Well, I think you made, what was it, 4 or 5 birdies on the back nine. So you've come home with a wet sail and put them under.
Oh, yeah. And then I'm sure they had a few more that night. I was staying a little bit further away, so I didn't get to see him that night. But yeah, we kind of just carried it into every event that they've come and watched.
So I'm going to avoid Mr. Crow every event I go to watch on the Aussie Tour now, or maybe just join him. I might just join in the birdie beers.
Nah, just join him. Just join him. Yeah, no, but that's a kind of ritual that we got at the moment. Dad and his mate, whenever they come out, it's just beer and birdie. So
I might actually pick a player for the Masters and do that this year. I'm sitting on the couch on my own.
Don't pick it for me last year. That second round didn't have a birdie. Birdie-less.
That's all right.
But he still got drunk anyway, as he should. They're like $3 beers.
Oh, mate, I want to talk to you about that. So, like, getting over there. So, I know that you went over before the Masters, so a few weeks before you got access to the property. What was that like? But before we get into the actual week, what was that like flying over there for the first time and, you know, driving up Magnolia and getting in there without probably all the stands up and the people there?
Yes, so I went like a month or two prior. I think I went like the week before or after New South Wales Open. Yeah, it was hectic. I just went over there with my coach, John Sirhan. I actually missed it. I missed the entry for the golf club. Like, it's so easy to miss. Like, it's just off the main highway. And then like, I was just like searching. Like, I was driving around. I'm like, where's this entry? Like, how do I get in? And then I finally found it. I was like, oh, I just driven past it on the highway, but there was no one behind me. So I was like, stuff it, I'm backing up.
Yeah.
Pulled in, and then there's a guard at the front gate just like waving his hands like, no, you can't. No, you got to go. And I'm like, I'm playing. Sorry, I missed the exit. Like I'm playing today. And then he was just like, oh, okay, all good. What's your tee time? Then it's just like, Mr. Crow. And you're like, oh, I feel important.
That's
yeah, and then obviously driving down Magnolia Lane the first time, you take your time and just take it all in, and it was sick. It was so cool. It was a little bit of a different experience from kind of what you're used to seeing on TV when you first get there, because like the stands were half up. I think most of them were up, but obviously there's no one there.
Yeah.
So there's like a few guys out on the golf course. They had some groups going out, and so you see just a lot of green. Like, there's so much room out there. But it was just great to just felt like I had the whole golf course to myself. I had just a local caddy and the coach, so we just kind of strolling around taking notes, and we did that for 4 days.
Cool. So, mate, that's sick. So then you get back over there for the Masters week. You know, it's the Friday before now, or Thursday before the Masters. You fly in, you got your team around you. Who went? What was that like sort of jumping on the jet from, I'm guessing, you flew from Sydney direct? What was that like?
So I actually flew from Sydney to, I went and stayed at the GA house in Orlando for about, I went probably 2 or 3 weeks earlier, and just practiced and trained. And then probably about 3 or 4 days prior, it was myself, my physio, Matt Green, and Johnny Turhan that we went. So we drove there. It's about 6 hours. We stopped off at TPC Sawgrass, went and played there. That was hectic.
Yeah.
That was probably 2 or 3 weeks after. Well, no, it was like a week after players, I think, at this time.
About a week, yeah.
Yeah, it was about a week or two after players. So all the stands were still up. So you kind of coming in playing 16, 17, and 18. And it's like, it's sick. So much fun. Then made our way there. I think we got in on the Saturday or the Sunday, and you kind of just like, you get in and you don't really know where to go. You're like, okay, well, where's registration? Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And you pick up your car, you get a courtesy car for the week. So you're just checking into all the things you need to do, and you're just kind of floating around. You're seeing all these players, and you're like, "Oh, pretty sick." This is pretty sick, and yeah, and you just try to get yourself settled as much as you can. It's such an experience. That you just it's unlike anything else. Like your heart's racing, and you just like it's just yeah, it's a different type of excitement when you're there. Like, how cool is this? And that was the first time I've obviously ever been there. And I think being there as a spectator would be pretty hectic. But when you're inside the ropes, you're like, this is as good as it gets.
Yeah. You mentioned some of the players you walk past and you see on property when you get there. Who was the one bloke that you wanted to even just not even talk to, but just sort of watch how they go about it? Was there anyone who you sort of pigeonholed as this is like my idol? Like, you're only a young bloke. So like Rory and those guys, what prime when you were coming through? Was there anyone who you like, yeah, I want to catch up with them or see how they go about it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like being on the range, there wasn't really any players that I had in mind that I wanted to like idolize and watch. But when you're on the range, you find yourself hitting balls next to some players where you're like, oh, I was a couple of spots down from Tiger at one point, hitting balls. I was next to Rahm. Like, you're next to all these just best players in the world, and you're like, and you're kind of watching what they're doing a little bit. You're taking a bit of a glimpse and hearing how different the ball sounds when they hit it. For some of those guys, like Rory, when hits the ball, like it sounds different. Like it's a different sound. Watching Rahm just bros and rope it down the range each time, and there's different guys where you're like, well, that doesn't sound very good, but they're great players. So there's obviously two different ends of the spectrum for all that. I do remember though, I was leaving after I picked up my hire car, and you're going out of Magnolia Lane, and it's pretty tight. It's only one in essentially through the exit. And then I do remember I got stuck like head on with Rory as he was coming in. And well, I was kind of like, who's going? Who's going, little cat man? We're like, oh. And he goes, oh, sorry, mate. And I was like, yeah, you're all good.
Who won?
He got stuck in the exit. He won.
Ah, good
As he
move.
should have. I just let him go. I was like, you've been here more than I have. Off you go. And
Practice
just chuckled
rounds.
it off a little bit.
Ah, that's good. But practice rounds and things like that. Obviously, great Aussie contingent. We've got Cam, Scotty, like Min, all those guys over there who have, got great experience. You would have spent some time with them, I'm guessing. What were the practice rounds like? What did GA set up for you and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of went about it trying to organize it myself, which is certainly the best way. I had the first practice round on, I think it was Monday. Yeah, it was Monday with Min and J-Day. And that was cool, obviously very laid back. I mean, Min played it the year before for his first time, so you're picking, like trying to pick his brain a little bit, obviously speaking a lot with J-Day. Got pretty close with him, and then you just ask him like so many questions. Obviously, he's had a pretty good record around that place, and you're watching how he hits it and how he plays now. Obviously, he swings a little bit different to how it's been over the years, and but you watch him wedge and putt, and that's still the same. It's first class, like it's master class. Watching what he does, and like it's you ask him just little pointers, because once you get around that place, like it's from a spectator view and TV look, like it looks super lush. But a lot of the fairways, they mow into the green, so you can get some pretty awkward lies just trying to pick them. And especially with some wedge shots, like just asking where certain spots you want to leave them, like 15 to par 5 if you got a layup. Like you want to lay up further back, because if you're 100 yards in, 100 meters in, you're a little bit on a downslope into the green trying to cover water, and there's not that much of a landing area from short and long. And you're like, I'm coming in with no bounce on my 60 degree into the green, and it's like, I could see myself hitting six shots here in the tournament, just flubbing in the piss. So, like you just ask for just different pointers and just get to know the guys. It was great. And then the next day I had Cam and Scotty. So I asked these guys heaps of questions, but it was a lot of fun out there. Like you just try to it's a really Really good experience just to try to feel a little bit more at ease, I guess. So that was great. Yeah, he just asked Scotty a lot of questions and Cam a lot of questions. So it was it was great.
That's cool, mate. It just seems like the Aussies, like, you know, they're also laid back. Like, there's no real ego. Like, we don't hear a heap from J-Day, but everyone you talk to who has a relationship with him is he's just the most giving, nicest bloke, especially to the younger guys coming through. Was there any one of those guys that you sort of coming through who you like? Obviously, Scotty won it probably when you were, what, year 7 or 8 at school, maybe even younger.
I think I was like 13 years old or 12 years old. Yeah,
so it must have been surreal walking around that property, hitting shots with him. Was there a piece of advice that Scotty gave you that stuck with you?
I mean, it's a tough tee shot golf course, from what everyone kind of lets on. Like, it's tough off the tee. I mean, the greens are the greens, like, they're really great. But it's tough off the tee. And I remember he just said, like, mate, you just drive it well. Just get that going good. Just pick your targets and you just got to make sure that you're hitting good and committed shots. Like, he kind of ran it through back with me, and it was just like every player that has won probably in the last 10 or 15 years or 10 years, they've all driven it the best apart from Patrick Reed.
Yep. Like, so you can just putt the dots
whether
off.
He's just putted the dots off it. Yeah. And it's like, every player that has won, they've driven it really, really well. They've been one of the top three driving stats of the week, top five driving stats of the week at least. So it's like, obviously, that was a bit of an eye opener, just to try to get that a little sharper. And then it was just kind of like, yeah, it's golf. I think, it was great to experience that at such a young age, and obviously not. Being an amateur as well is like, it was great in the sense that once you get out there, you realize that it is golf.
Yep.
Like, you are just hitting golf shots at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So it was, cool. It definitely settles you down a little bit. It makes everything else feel a lot easier.
That's sick, mate. Well, you've had some pretty cool experiences. Talk about the amateur dinner. Jasper mentioned it the other day when we had him on, and he wasn't sure what it was or how it looked or anything like that. But what's that like? Like, what do they put on for you for a feed? I know for the winner's dinner that the previous Masters champion actually pays for the food. What's it like in the amateur's dinner? I'm sure you blokes don't have to stump up.
No, definitely not. You barely fork at anything for the week. They treat you so well. I was amazed at how well the amateurs get treated there. Like, it's outrageous. The amateur dinner was really nice. Like, obviously, you dress up, you get in, and you kind of mingle outside for a bit, meet people, introduce yourself, meet the other amateurs, get chatting, and then you go in for dinner. I can't actually remember what they brought out, but, like, it was really good food. But I do remember, like, there's all these speeches. They run through all the player lists for the week for, like, the amateurs. They got this whole video montage of how the players got through. And it's really just there for all the amateurs. Like, it's a really nice night. They give you all these Masters books. And then I'm sure Jasper will do the same. But last year I stayed at the Crow's Nest Monday night after the amateur dinner, which is what most players do. So we had a full room up there that night. But it's a pretty late night. Like, it's a long week before it even starts. Like, I remember we wrapped up at around, you're in bed by like 11:30, like trying to settle down and then go to sleep. And then it was like, I had a practice round at 8:30 the next morning with Scotty and Cam, and you're like, don't get much sleep in here. Then you're up and at it again. But yeah, it's such a cool night. So I'm sure he'd stay in the Crow's Nest at least once, if you're silly not to.
Oh, mate, absolutely. I think the one thing Jasper said, and I know that you did it, mate, was you're just not going to leave no stone unturned for the week. Like, just say yes to everything and enjoy it while you're there.
Absolutely.
Mate, let's chat about as well the par 3 contest. Did you get a start in that? What was that like? We'll talk about the week now and the build-up to the first tee, but, you know, par 3 contest, that's one of the best things to watch on tally in the lead-up. How was that for you?
Yeah, it was awesome. I played Ryan Fox and Sam Bennett. Had Dad caddy for me. It was a really cool experience. Like, it was a lot of fun. Can't remember who I spoke to. I think it might have been Min before we played. You know, it was just kind of like, oh, you know how it goes. Like, you don't want to win the par three. And then you're like, oh, yeah. And then it is good to an extent. It kind of flips you from being serious to just enjoy it. Like, it's a lot of fun. The holes are really sick. Like, you don't even know it's there. Like, there's so much room in that place. And yeah, it's just like, just walk out the back there. There's a full par three golf course. And you're like, a six this.
Yeah.
What was it? I think it was the last hole. Last hole, I nearly had that hole in one. Yeah. So you could play like a short one down the hill over the water. And that, like, it's just like, it's made for hole in ones. Like, they put a pin at the bottom of the tee, kind of funnels in. If you land it,
yeah,
you could land it in four different spots. So you could go on the hole. And then it's kind of the same with the next. It's just like a little lime green. But from like back in the tee, you're like, I could just easily dump this in the water. Like, I don't really want to hit in the water.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I'll hit it. Like, I've seen everyone do this, hit it right of the pin, long and right, it'll spin back down. And then I think I hit it, and I hit long and left, and it'll spin back down. And then I hit it long and right, and it spun back down, nearly went in, like, just grazed the hole. And you're like, oh, this is sick. And let my dad, they have the caddy shot in the last there.
Yeah.
And I was like, Dad, here you go. And he goes, well, he goes right. He plays with like six or seven, and I think he pulled maybe 9-iron, 8-iron maybe, and just bellied it and nearly skimmed across to the green.
Oh, no.
I took like six skims, and I just lost it. So funny.
He would have been building that up in his head the whole round as well, and he's just gone.
Yeah, he was. But no, it was a great experience, and
yeah,
like, it was awesome. I didn't touch on this before. It was just I had my mum, my dad, two of his best mates. I had two of my best mates. I think we all stayed in the house. I think it was 10 of us. So, like, it's such a cool week. Yeah. Like, there's just always people there. Like, it's so much fun. And then I had probably 5 to 10 Aussie guys that I knew that come out, that flew out and watched for the whole week.
That's
so sick. It was, yeah, it was awesome. It was so nice to see fresh faces. For sure.
Yeah, mate, absolutely, mate. Let's rip in to the actual tournament now. You got paired up with Min Woo and Larry Myers, who won the 1987 Masters. He broke the hearts of Australia when he chipped in to take Greg Norman down. He beat Seve Ballesteros and Greg Norman in a playoff. But he chipped in to roll the shark in what another heartbreaker at Augusta. What was it like playing? Like, we'll talk about yourself and Min. You know each other really well, but what was it like playing with Larry Myers, like 1987 Masters champion, and, you know, got a pretty big place in history there?
Yeah, it was good. I think it was in the first few holes, I definitely said to him, I was like, this is quite ironic. You've broken the hearts of so many Australians, yet you get paired with two Aussies. And he found that pretty funny. Yeah. But no, it was good. It was nice to kind of talk to him about his career. It was his last Masters. So it was, it was really good to just kind of just walk the fairways, have some chats with him about how he's enjoyed just being here over the last, how many years, 30 years, 25 years, however long it is.
Long time.
And it was just great just to kind of talk to him about his career and what he's up to now and what he's planning on doing and just all that kind of stuff. So it was, it was good. It was very good.
It's one of the nice touches, I guess, at the Masters that, you know, past champions can play as long as they like. I reckon it's great that a young bloke like yourself, and even for Min, who's, you know, really firing at the moment on the world stage, going back and playing with a guy like this who's been there, done it, been at the top for a long period of time. So that was cool when I saw that you were paired up with yourself and Min. You and Min paired up together, which you got paired up again together at Liverpool as well, which is crazy. What was it like pegging up with one of your mates at, you know, probably one of your dream tournaments? What was that like?
Yeah, it was awesome. It obviously made the nerves a little bit better. You just another fresh face you can kind of just chat to and have a laugh with. Like, it was great. Talked pretty much the entire round. Like, it was really good.
From what I see, Min doesn't take himself too seriously off the golf course, for sure.
Yeah, no, he's great. He's got such an aura around him. He just wants to show off. Like, it's great. It's so good to watch.
It's going to be special, isn't he? All right, let's go to that first tee shot. So, you know, you've had the build up, you've done everything, you get there, it's just you and the golf, your driver and your golf ball. What was that like getting that first one off and in play?
Yeah, like I was playing it down for the whole week leading up to it. Like I wasn't going to be too nervous and I felt fairly comfortable. Like I did feel like I should have been out there. Like I didn't feel out of place. And then obviously nerves in the first tee kind of kick in, but it wasn't as much as what I thought it would be. I think I did a very good job at trying to focus on what was ahead of me and just the shot in front of me. And I remember the shot. I just didn't feel that bad. I put a good swing in it and I got at the top of the backswing. I was like, don't go right. And I just flush hooked this thing so far left. And I was like, ooh. And then I just watched it take a few bounces. I said to my caddy, Chews, at the time, I was like, I reckon that's all right. And I get up there and it's on the ninth fairway and I get a clear shot at the green. I'm like, I doubt there's been any players over here already today.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And like with the crowds and things like that, it seems like everyone's so respectful there. What was that like interacting with crowds? And like you played here in Australia, you've played in Asia, you've won a pro tournament here, but what are the crowds difference like at Augusta and, you know, being inside the ropes with so many eyes on you? They're just golf nuffies there, really.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's great. Like it's an experience like any other. Funnily enough, it's probably a little bit more exciting in the practice rounds because there's more people in the practice rounds. It's a little bit easier to get tickets.
Oh, okay.
So it's like there's so many more people in the practice rounds and they just park up on 16 and 12 and then it's just kind of like, this is sick. And you do like the skim shot. But throughout the whole event, like it's obviously like throughout certain holes, there's going to be more people. And ours wasn't necessarily a group where it was always packed throughout the whole event, which did help to an extent with the nerves. But it was it's great. It's probably a lot more rowdy crowd, I'm sure. But everywhere with golf is in the last 10 years, 20 years, so it's like, but it's it was still a lot of fun.
Favorite shot you hit? Do you have a memorable shot where you're like, all right, cool, this is going to be in the memory bank when I'm, you know, 100 years old on my deathbed or something thinking about it? Is there a shot that you remember?
I do. It was the second round at 16. That pin up the back right and it's like, it's tough to get to. Like hit anywhere left, you're down the tier. You hit it right, you got a really tricky bunker shot. It's really tight. There's probably only about 4 or 5 paces right up where the pin is between either side. You pretty much got to hit it like a channel and kind of feed it in.
Yeah, yeah.
And we got there and it was kind of like a mini cyclone hit. Like it was puffing up above those trees. And I watched Min hit and I reckon he hit, I think he hit wedge on 9-iron. And he hit a mint shot and it was just got a little bit too high, got to the tip of the trees and it got smoked and landed on front edge to a back right flag. And it was like this, and it was down, it was in off the right. So like it's just not a nice wind to hit to that back right hole.
Yeah.
And I just grabbed 8-iron and I just knuckled a low cut. It didn't get above halfway up the trees, just low, landing in the front right section on that level and just trickled up to like 6 feet pin high or 4 or 5 feet pin high. And I was like, that is possibly the best golf shot I've ever hit.
That's a good place to do it, mate, with a crowd there too.
And I was birdieless the whole round. Everyone's heard that about the trees falling. So I remember Larry probably had 25 feet and then we hear a couple of crackles, all that tree comes down, then everything's in ransom, like everyone's kind of scattering around and I'm like, what are we doing? Like, and then Larry just goes and hits his putt. And like everyone's still trying to sort everything out. Larry just hits his putt. And I'm like, oh, okay. So now I've got to hit my putt then. So I've got 5 feet down the hill. And probably about, as the ball got about an inch off the club face, the siren went. And I'm watching this ball trickle towards the hole and then miss left. And I'm just like, if I suffer waited an extra 2 seconds, the siren went, and then I had to come back the next day and hit that. Then I had to come back the next day and tap in this far for par.
That's nuts. Buddy Larry. Larry's killed you.
So I was like, nice. And then obviously he didn't birdie 17 or 18, so I'm like, oh. I would have lost my pro status, but I haven't got that yet.
No, you're all right, mate. You're allowed to have a bad day in the toughest tournament in the world. And favourite hole, mate? Well, which hole sort of sticks out in your memory, which, you know, you can just picture?
I mean, 13's pretty hectic. 13's so sick. Like just coming around the corner and seeing so many guys kind of parked up along the side of the trees, and then you got the green, you got the trees in the background, you got the bushes, and then you got the stands just off to the left of the 14th tee. So everyone just has such a great angle, and it's just such a picturesque hole. It's so cool.
I think it's the Azalea hole from memory.
It is.
You can go on the Masters website, which is absolutely amazing for anyone out there as well, and just look at every hole on a flyover. And it'll change. If you haven't done it before, it'll open your eyes to what an amazing place it is. If you had your time again, Harrison, what would you do differently? You know, you're a young kid going over there, bright-eyed. You know, you've won your way in. Is there anything you'd go back and change, or if you got to redo, or when you do qualify again, that you'll go in differently to the Masters?
Yeah, for sure. That kind of lead up to the first round, it's for us, for the amateurs, it can be very busy. I just felt like I had interview after interview, and I felt like I was running around. Like, I had the launch of the, I got invited to the launch of the new Masters game, the Road to the Masters, on the Tuesday, on the Sunday night. Yeah, it was a Sunday night. So, and I was like, I'm out on the golf course doing a bit of practice round, then I've got interviews upon interview. I had probably three interviews in a row, rushing home to get changed, come back, do that, get home late, then I'm at practice round. Then I got to do interviews, and then it was like, run home, get changed, get my suit, get ready, interviews, Masters dinner, wake up at 8 o'clock, wake up at, no, like 5:30 or 6 o'clock, get ready for my practice round. Then I got more interviews, and it's just kind of like I'm taxed already before Wednesday.
Yep.
And you notice a lot of the big guys will just say no. And it's just kind of like you understand it a little bit more. You're like, it's like you need to be a little bit more selfish when it comes to your preparation. Like, it doesn't matter externally what's going on. Like, you'll do the ones that you have to do, that you're obligated to do, but anything else, it's just like, no thanks. It's nice. Like, yeah, got to prioritize your preparation. Yeah, and that was probably the biggest thing that I've learned. And obviously for myself and amateurs, like all those players, they have to go through their managers, the players' managers. So the manager is seen to be the bad guy. Because they'll be like, yeah, no, sorry, he's not doing any interviews today. And Perfect. You just kind of got to be selfish and just be like, no, not doing them. I need to, like, do them. You can do them, but you just kind of got to plan them and just making sure you're doing your prep properly. You're not doing too much of the golf course. It's very easily, like, you can very easily stay there at the range for 3 hours because there's 300 people behind you watching your balls or chipping and putting ring. Like, it's cool to have people watch it like that at that tournament. So it's just the biggest thing is not doing too much.
Yep.
So, yeah, if I had it all over again, yeah, that'd be just plan my normal weekly routine and just stick to it and just say no to any of the external stuff that I feel like could hinder me. But then another thing was I definitely did a good job that I feel like you can get stuck watching – too many players as well.
Yeah, I'd do that.
Yeah, you can get stuck watching too many players and you can, I guess you definitely can forget that you are playing and you're not a spectator. So definitely you did a good job at just, like, I noticed all the big guys, like you notice Tiger, you notice Rahm, you notice DJ, you notice all the best players in the world. And then it's just kind of like, whatever, I'm doing my thing. And that's probably the biggest thing I feel like as a player you definitely need to stick to if you're not one of the best players in the world or if you're in awe of watching these guys. It's just like you got your business, you got your job to do, and you just – doesn't matter. You just go, oh, that's sick. All right. They're just guys at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. And, yeah, we can't wait for you to get back there, mate. You'll get there for sure with the career you're putting together already. Mate, let's chat about that really quickly. You know, you had your amazing amateur career. I think you got to 23rd in the world. You won heaps of events. You won the New South Wales Amateur and the New South Wales Open as an amateur. But you're the only bloke to do that since a bloke called Jim Ferrier in 1938. I'm sure you've been told that multiple times by media outlets. But just in a bit of an overview of your amateur career, is there a standout highlight other than the Asia Pacific that you can go back to and be like, yeah, that was a really cool moment?
Yeah, it's probably going to be New South Wales Open.
Yeah.
I think purely because obviously it was my first pro event, first professional event win. And it just made it all that much sweeter when I was in Sydney. So I had a lot of people out there supporting, a lot of friends, a lot of family. And it was just kind of like, how good's this? Like there's 15, 20 people out there supporting me. And it's just kind of like, instead of like going out for a dinner and then setting up for a flight home or flying out that night, it's just like, all right, we're going home. We're getting changed. We're going out.
That's sick.
And it's just like rounding up everyone. You're like, yeah, this is awesome. No, so that was obviously the post, like the celebrations was great. But yeah, just in that moment was awesome. Being able to kind of like get off to the start that I did that event after really not being a favorite, with the leaderboard being pretty packly tight, and then come out with, I think, three birdies in a row. And then it's like you turn 5 under and you're like, oh, I feel like I've done this easily. And then it's like, hadn't sniffed a bogey all week, and then make bogey on 10. Then it's like, oh, there's plenty of birdies coming up. I think I had a 4 or 5 shot lead at that moment. And then all of a sudden you got a 1 shot lead, you're like the last. You're like, oh, that narrowed in pretty quick. So then that was definitely a big highlight of my career. That was probably more so the best golf that I've played to win an event. It was probably the best golf I've ever played to win an event. There's certainly other events where I didn't feel like my game was there, that I was able to do it. Asia Pacific being one of them, I didn't really feel like my game was anywhere near the right spot that I thought it was going to be. But it's golf, it's weird. You can have your game in the best spot that it can be and play pretty shit, and then you can have your game in a pretty poor spot and then just find a way. So it's good to have both, certainly in the arsenal.
That's cool. There's only a couple of amateurs who have won the tournament, and Benny Eccles actually started this podcast with me, believe it or not. So yourself and Benny, you would have sort of touched base with him, I guess, Eccles, at the winners' dinner last year. He got engaged just this week too, Benny. So big shout out to the great man.
Oh, did he? But,
he did. Oh. Yeah. He's over there in Queenstown.
Congratulations to him. No, he's a legend. I played with him at Cathedral, I think somewhere else as well. He had a great year. He had a great season.
Yeah, he did. But great to see. Yeah, so winning it as an amateur, like you have that carrot dangled, and I've talked about it with Benny heaps of times on the pod, like to turn professional at the time, because you obviously get your exemptions on the Aussie tour for a couple of years, and you know, you get some starts in all the Aussie majors, I guess. Was that something you thought of when you won the New South Wales Open at the start of 2022, or was that never in the plan?
Absolutely. Obviously, like I had a really great run leading up to that event. I had a couple amateur event wins before that. And obviously, it was a great start to the year. And then it was just kind of like, oh, sweet, I can turn pro now. I've got status. Then it was like, talk to the team. And then it was just kind of like, well, we haven't really actually had a chance to go overseas yet. It was like, I think it was like COVID. And then it was like, I only just finished high school. And then it was a couple other things. And then it was just kind of like, why don't we do all this first? So we go out, just play throughout the UK, the US, do a stint, play US amateur, do all this, an Eisenhower trophy, and then cap it off with an Asia pack at the end of the year. Just get some experience under the belt. And then I was just kind of like, all right, well, definitely we'll do that. And then I was just kind of like, all right, you can feel like you definitely can get stuck in a little bit of a rut where you're like, oh, I want to just turn pro. Like I'm over it. And I feel like for a little bit I was, and especially hearing other people tell you as well, it doesn't really help the situation. But then it's just kind of like, once you kind of realize a little bit more, and I probably didn't realize until after Asia Pac, that it's like, this is a good thing. Knowing when is right to go. And as if you can get enough experience under your belt as you can, that's the best thing. That's the best thing possible. So then obviously after last year having two majors and then having some like more events in there and doing a little bit of an overseas stint again, that was just kind of like a little bit more of an eye-opener and be like, okay, well, now I know I'm ready. So now I know I can take this next step.
Yeah, that's cool. And you did turn pro in September last year. You've had some pretty good finishes, like second at the Queensland PGA, I think tied eighth at Hong Kong Open, and then WebEx Series and the Nash had tied fifth. So finished off pretty well the back end of the year. And you also went to Asian to a Q school and secured your card. You clutched up actually, mate, when I was reading up. You had a 66 final round. Only the top 35 players got cards. You were 27th. But how's it been playing for money and actually this being your job now? Like, how's that for sort of 6 months been for you and the mindset?
Yeah, it's definitely different pressure. You can definitely, there's a little bit of a mind switch, I guess, like when you're, obviously you're playing Saturday, Sunday and you're coming down the stretch, and if you're not in contention in amateur golf, you're kind of like, yeah, whatever, it doesn't really matter. Like, you want to finish well, but then when you're playing for money, it's like every position does count. Yeah. Even for order of merit points to get your tour card to secure it or whatever it might be, it creeps in a little bit more and every shot does count. So it's more like you're just trying throughout the end, whether you're in contention or not. And there's certainly been a few times where you're like, oh, I hold this putt. That putt was worth $5,000. Or in Hong Kong, it was like, I made a 15-foot slider on the last sustained side top 10. And then you're like, well, that putt was probably worth about $10,000.
Yeah.
Or $15,000 or whatever it might be. And it's just kind of like, I definitely don't think about that at the moment, but that's probably not a good thing. I don't think. Like, it is just golf and it is gonna creep into your head at times. But yeah, I think the biggest thing is it's just every shot does count. Like, it's not just an amateur event or it's just not just whatever. It's like you are playing for your livelihood and you are playing for money. So it does. Yeah. Every shot does count, whether you're in position, whether you're in contention or not.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough, mate. That's cool. A lot of guys say that, like, the mindsets takes a while to sort of adapt to it and be like, it's actually my job now. Like, you know, if I don't play well, I'm cooked. Or like, you know, I'm
correct. Exactly. Let alone the Q school pressure. That was different. That was a new experience for me in Thailand. That's a completely different pressure.
We had Mika on recently and he spoke about guys who get through Q school, the respect he has for them, because he hasn't had a great record when he goes to Q schools. Like, he's obviously won his way to where he is now, but take us through that. So Asia was grueling, like heaps of Aussies over there. You have to shoot, you have to go pretty low in that final round, mate, to get your card. Let's be real here. And you've gone and done it. But
I mean, they have, I mean, it's five rounds in Asian, in Thailand. So it's there's a cut after two rounds. So obviously a little bit worried about that. Probably didn't get off to the best of starts. I think I shot maybe one over or two over. So it's like I'm over par pretty early. Didn't have a great second round either. So I'm kind of just like a little bit stuck and feel like I'm playing pretty good. Just wasn't happening. Then it's like you play round three and four. Play round three and I'm like, shit, I'm going to need four or five under to make the fourth round cut to play the last round.
Yep.
And I think I shot four under on the fourth round to scrape in on the number for the last round on the cut. And I think it was top 70 or 80. I think it was something around that. And it was just kind of like, oh, all right, but there's still a lot of work to do. And then you're like, well, I think I needed a low round. I needed at least six or seven under. And you kind of like, it's just like a different pressure. It's just like you're playing for your livelihood. You're playing for a job. Yep. So it's like, it's certainly different pressure. And I remember coming out super hot in that last round. I mean, I hold out my first hole of the day. And like, I was in a different spot. Like, everyone's teeing off one and I'm at the back end of the field teeing off 10. Like, last group. So it's like I'm down the other end. And then it was like, got off on a great start. I think I was six under through nine. And then it's like a tough front nine. And I struggled the day before. I got it to six under through nine the day before, or five through nine. And I had probably, I think I had a double and threw it two bogeys or something like that in the back nine and birdied a few holes coming in. And then it was just kind of like, I'm coming to that nine again today.
Yeah.
And I just need to hold on.
Yeah.
Then drop a couple of shots, pick a couple back up, drop another couple of shots. And then it's just like the last three holes, I'm like, this is so tough. Like
yeah.
every shot is so nerve wracking because you're just kind of like, yeah, a bit stuck in between, like holding on and still trying to not worry about that and play good golf.
Yeah.
And I know the day before I checked my phone and checked the leaderboard. And it was great. I had Deegan Kenny on the bag and I spoke to him about that after and he goes, shouldn't be doing that. Like whatever the result is and what you have to shoot shouldn't dictate what you need to do. Like it shouldn't change the scenario. I remember I needed to make par on the fourth round to get through. Then I just completely ignored it that last round. I was just kind of like, all right, we need to focus. Obviously in your head, you have like a guess of what it might be, but you're just trying to shrug it off and just do the best that you can do. But it was a different nerve, certainly a different nerve. And I remember I made bogey up the last. And then I was like, oh no, that could be it. Then it's like I had Barbs watching me that last round. And then I shake hands and he's just in the background just going like this. And I'm like, oh, shit, yeah. This is like different. It's a different kind of relief, different kind of sigh relief. So,
yeah.
That was a great week for sure.
Yeah, having dual status is pretty cool, mate. Like obviously over here in Oz and now over there in Asia. What is the rest of the year? Before we get into the fun bit of this pod, I know I've taken heaps of your time, but what does the rest of the year look like for you? Going to Saudi, what does the rest of the year look like?
Yeah, so I got Saudi in about a week and a half, so or 2 weeks. So yeah, head over there. I then go home for a couple of weeks at least. But I'm going to come back over here. I'll do a US Open qualifying. Try to do some Mondays. The Asian Tour schedule's pretty quiet this time of the year. There's another international series event in Morocco in like July. So it'll pick up around like July, August, and by like September, it'll be really busy.
Yep.
So it'll be packed around that time. And then it's just this time of the year is just play all the events and try to fill in some stuff in between, whether it's pro-ams back home or probably more than likely just trying to get some starts over here in Europe. Just try to fill it in and just play as much golf as I can, really.
Love it, mate. Well, good luck with it, mate. We'll be watching you eagerly. Hopefully you can get a W over there in Asia and set yourself up beautifully.
That'd be nice.
You went viral a couple of years ago. You're sitting in a pub having a couple of beers and Eric Anders Lang from
Random Golf Club.
Random Golf Club, that's right. From Random Golf Club rolls in and is searching for a candidate to hit a shot onto the old course. Tell us that story if you can.
Yeah, so we've just finished the St. Andrews Links trophy there. All the boys are in there having dinner, having some beers. And then a few of them go, oh, that's Eric Anders Lang. And then I was like, oh, yeah. Didn't think much of it. I wasn't speaking to him at the time. And then he ran into Jack Buchanan and they were having a chat and he was just explaining that he wanted to recreate the film or just recreate the shot. It was Ernie Els that did it.
Ernie Els.
Supposedly back in the day, and he asked the bar staff, he asked the manager of the bar, and it was like Ernie Els did it at 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning off a lot of bottles of wine. And, you want to recreate the shot. And then Jack put his hand up, Butchie put his hand up to do it, and then he just dragged me out. He goes, come on, we're going to do it. I was like, all right. And then he was just like, oh, you go first. And I was like, all right, I'll go first. Hit the shot. There's heaps of people lined up behind me and just watching me hit. I teed up on the edge of the concrete in a tee, found a crack, flushed it, and it was like that another guy down there and it was like, oh, it's long and right. And I was like, okay, well, this line is a lot further left. And then Butchie was like, leave me go. I was like, no, I'll go one more. I'll one more. I want to find the line. I was like, I reckon the line's over here on this chimney. Couldn't fit the tee back in the ground. So there was a crack on the edge of the concrete. And then I was just asked Eric, I was like, do you care if I scratch your club? And he was just like, no.
Yeah.
So I just teed the ball up on the concrete. And there was a crack in the steps that it was just kind of like my right foot's a little bit back. I'm like, what's up with this? And I just picked it off the top.
What was the fallout from that, mate? Like, you know, it went absolutely nuts on socials, and I'm sure you picked up a few followers as well, which is always nice. But what was the fallout from that? Like, you sort of put your name on the world map, I guess, doing something like that. But what was the fallout for you?
Well, it wasn't really too much. I know there were certainly people that weren't happy with it. There was certainly a lot of people that loved it. Didn't really worry about it too much. Probably the only thing was I didn't really want people seeing me for that shot. I wanted people to see me for my golf. But I guess I kind of saw it as like, I saw it in a good way, and so did a lot of other people. That kind of shows like our culture that we're not really afraid to shy away from things and just give it a full crack. And that's what I did. And I was honestly a little bit nicer kind of having that win at Asia Pac, where everyone, you see a lot of articles. It was like, guy hits the shot, wins an event to get into the Masters. And it's kind of like, okay, well, that's what I'd rather be known for. Like, I'd rather be known for my golf, not some silly trick shot on the drink.
But mate, like, as you said, like, Aussies and you blokes, I know a lot of, like, Joshy Greer and a lot of you younger guys on the Aussie tour, you're great mates, you love having a good time, but you work bloody hard at your craft as well. So the fact that you've gone out and proven, you know, you're not just a trick shot pony, which is not what you were anyway, like, you're a superstar. But yeah, pretty cool, mate. And I love watching it. I reckon it was one of the cool things. So more of that, please. I did actually, I'll preface before we hit into the quick five questions. I did ask Josh Greer yesterday for some dirt on you, just to see if there was any
questions. He actually did send me that.
Yeah, and he goes, nothing that can go on air. So he's looked after you there, which is, he gave me nothing. He did, gave me nothing. So he's a good man. But, mate.
He's got my back.
Yeah, he's a good boy. Good boy. mate, thanks so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure. But on every pod, we do five questions at the end. They're all just like quick fire, give us your best answer. But we kick off with your dream four ball.
Tiger, Scotty, Dad.
Nice. That'd be fun.
Abs got.
Round Augusta. What's your career low round? It can be socially in a tournament, just the lowest round, lowest you've ever gone off the stick.
I think it's 9. I don't think it wasn't in a tournament though. I think 8's in a tournament.
Best item that goes in your golf bag. So it can be a club, ball marker, just something that goes in your bag every time you change bags. Something that non-negotiable goes in. Like, have you got a good luck charm or just something that you love?
Texter. Stuff. I keep losing them. I've had to restack up literally 4 times in the last 4 weeks. I keep losing.
Sharpies. Sponsorship deal coming your way. Favorite course you've ever played? Obviously Augusta, but outside of that, favorite golf course you can get, keep going back to and playing?
Oh, well, Augusta's going to be the most, probably going to be the easiest answer, but I think probably I played Greyhawk Golf Club in Scottsdale. That's pretty sick.
Now, mate, you remember it's in Mix up in Sydney. Played there for a long time. The wind can get up there, I know. You're up there on a freezing cold day. You're through 9 holes. You haven't had brekkie. You're running late for your tea time. You've been out with Butch and Joshy on the Terps the night before. You're having a sandwich or a pie halfway through the round to get yourself back.
On the Terps the night before?
Yeah.
Oh, pie.
Good boy.
100%.
That's when you're at your worst. 100%. When you're at your worst, what are you picking? Is what I'm getting at. And you're picking a pie.
Pie and a Gatorade.
Yeah, good boy. We love it. But. Harrison, mate, it's been a pleasure to have you on the pod. Been wanting to have you on for a long time, so it's cool to hear your story. Masters week, this will go out. I'm sure all the listeners will be loving it as well, mate. So enjoy the next little phase of your career. We'll be watching eagerly, and we'll catch up with you back when you're in Oz.
Awesome. Thanks, Ace, mate. Appreciate having me.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from Producers Clubby Sports Network. If you enjoyed the show, then it would be a massive help if you could like, follow, rate, subscribe, tap the bell, leave a review, or even share it with your friends. If you want to get in touch to share feedback, suggestions, or to advertise with one of our podcasts, then email hello@producer.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.